Infendo Radio is on now.
Welcome to Infendo Radio, the best Nintendo podcast on the English-speaking internet. This is episode 343. I'm your host, Lewis Pugh, and joining me tonight we have Harrison Milfeld.
Hey, everybody.
And Colin Crompton.
Hello there.
On tonight's show, we have two main parts for you. We're going to start off with a brief what we've been playing, and then move on to our Nintendo news. So, to get us started on what we've been playing, Colin, I hear you've been playing Watch Dogs on the Wii U.
Yes, I have. Where to start? So, okay, so everyone knows that Watch Dogs is this big deal, you know, it's coming out with a brand new IP.
It was a big deal.
it was a big deal. I feel like it was one of those games that was hyped up so much and then not terrible by any means, but it just didn't really live up to much expectations that I personally didn't think it would.
The main issue I have with the Wii U version that came out was it got delayed by 6 months.
And that 6 months seemed to drag as well. I mean, we say 6 months after the fact, and it doesn't seem huge. Well, obviously 6 months is a big time. But it seemed like at least a year, like during the time after launch.
It did, and you know there were times when I guess when there was like when they were trying to release this, several people throughout the community thought like, you know, telling Ubisoft just like, you know what, if you're going to drag us through this and wait out, I mean, just cancel it already. But that was never the case.
Yeah, and it probably wasn't helped by the fact that obviously Watch Dogs had been delayed numerous times just in general. But yeah, how does it actually play on the Wii U?
Well, the delay, the 6 months, they couldn't have touched it, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Okay, so the game itself is great, okay? There's nothing wrong with the game, it's fine. It's fun, fantastic. There are some technical problems, which I've encountered. Okay. One, the main one that I have is the sound is never in sync with what's happening.
Oh.
It's always slightly
as
off.
In, like, dialogue, or just
everything, sound effects,
oh,
dialogue.
Wow.
It's always a bit behind what happens on the screen. Now, this is most noticeable when you're driving through the city and you press the left stick in to press the car horn.
Okay.
You won't hear the car horn until about 10 seconds later when you're driving. It's such an immense delay sometimes.
Crash into somebody, whatever, and as soon as about 5 seconds after the crash, you just go, beep!
Look, you can drive for a lamppost and nothing will no sound will play. But then you're driving down the street normally, and then you hear this crashing noise. And you're like, that happened a while ago, you know.
So peculiar, I've not heard about this. Have you done any, like, investigation work on your side to see if this is, like, a something that Ubisoft's spoken about post-release? Or?
I haven't. I should have done, really, but no, I haven't. It's just, well, I don't see the problem with it because, as I said before last week, you have to do, there's a compulsory install for the game.
Yeah.
And so that's installed onto the flash drive. And I'm like, okay, so it's nothing, you know, because I've got some games stored onto USB that sometimes take longer to load up.
Do you use are you using the same USB, kind of like what I'm doing, is a USB card reader?
Yeah, it's like a flash drive type thing.
Yeah, because I think, like, if this is for anybody who needs, like, a quick fix, whatever, on a storage problems on a like a Wii U, whatever, if you were just kind of in a quick bind and it's only like $8, it's like SD card readers. It just tricks the Wii U into thinking it's a hard drive.
Yeah, yeah. That's the solution I've come up with as well. But the game itself is perfectly, you know, it's the open world is fun. It's fun to drive around, but there's sometimes like graphical glitches as well that occur. There's a little bit of slowdown, I've noticed, if you're going through a condensed area. So, yeah, it's a little bit disappointing. Yeah. In fact, it's been around for 6 months, and they clearly haven't, it seems like they haven't play-tested it, to be honest. It's like, you know,
It's almost as if they wanted to give a reason why not to actually release these type of games onto the Wii U. I mean, not trying to speculate too much, but it's just the cause and effect because of the sales of the console itself that we're just stuck with the console with the occasional good first third-party game and the usual first-party offerings.
Yeah. I'm also, what's really nice about the game is that it's exclusive Wii U feature. Again, so you got the gamepad. You think, oh, okay. The main character, Aiden Pierce, has got his touch device that can hack into anything. Brilliant. You don't use the gamepad for that at all. It's purely the gamepad. The only thing that's on it is an interactive map.
Yeah, that is a shame. There's a lot of missed potential there. Missed opportunity.
There's no, like, he doesn't look down and you have to look down at the gamepad and there's nothing like that.
You would think it would make a lot of sense if the screen just... They made it look like the phone, whether it was, you know, landscape or portrait or whatever. They just, like, there's a bunch of, like, Wii U games where, like, the gamepad is, like, the in-world device.
Yeah, I mean, the one I can think of clearly is, like, Arkham City. The gamepad is on Batman's arm, you know.
Yeah.
And when you pause the game, he looks down at it, and you can use the touchscreen to go through the options. But on this, on Watch Dogs, you press plus, start, and it brings up an on-screen phone on the main screen. But the touchscreen still has the same map on it.
Sounds like Lego City Undercover does Watch Dogs like tablet phone integration better.
That's a real disappointment. But I
guess that is kind of the problem of getting a multi-platform game and like just doing a Wii U skew of it. If they were to go for all the effort and make it, you know, the Wii U the phone, it would seem like that would take away from the other versions, and there isn't really much, I guess, reason for Ubisoft to go through that effort. I guess it is in that weird situation.
Yeah.
Well, they try and make Wii U the best version of it.
Yeah, but yeah, it's the sort of thing you could tell that there's been no optimization for the console.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Which is the real, it's a real shame.
So just as a general thing now, I mean, you probably wouldn't recommend, maybe my guess, the Wii U version if people had different ways to play this game.
Yeah, if you have the ability to play it on a different console, I would say get the other versions.
So, as a general thing, would you recommend this game to people? I've still not actually played it yet.
I think Lego City Undercover just seems way more, more interesting product. It's probably a
more funnier game. I'll give you that because it is a game I have played through and it is pretty funny.
Yeah, so I mean, I have to mention, this is so silly, but the actual plot line to the game, just the first 2 hours that I played, I don't know who wrote this. But you start the game as a tutorial, you're hacking away from a building.
Okay.
And you cause a city-wide blackout, which is pretty cool.
Sounds pretty cool so far.
And so the way that the mega corporations battle the hackers is by creating a central OS, which controls everything.
Okay.
And I was thinking, well, you just create a single OS that can control everything. And of course, the hackers now know how to hack into that, which means that's why you can manipulate everything in the game.
Yeah.
And I was like, why would they do that? That just seems like the worst possible solution to it. It's like, what do we do? Oh, we'll create one system. Yeah, that'll do. It's just, yeah.
I don't know. So, I mean, I initially quite liked the idea of it. I mean, I don't know what, you know, the in-world reasoning of why the organization do create that one system. But I could envision a world where, like, pretty much all electronics run off a similar network. And so I think when they revealed this game, they kind of did just paint the picture of the universe just by, like, a narrator. Mm. And it did sound really interesting. And I do like the idea of being able to, you know, hack anything and being a developer. I mean, that sort of stuff does sound quite cool. But it does sound like... I'm using the phrase again, but it didn't quite live up to the potential of what it could have been.
It was basically when they have... It's almost as if, like, well, I mean, it's not just the potential. It just... They have so many of these options to actually make this real-life world to the point where you can use this hacking ability. And it's almost as if they just kind of gave up halfway.
I mean, I think the biggest example of... They had some ideas that weren't properly implemented properly is the idea that if there's a morality system, so you can be a bad vigilante or a good vigilante, but the way they measure it doesn't make any sense. You get good points by, you know, detaining bad guys and things like that. Great. You lose points by just running people over, which makes sense. But you can hack into...
Like it's essentially a reverse GTA.
Yeah, but you can hack into people's phones and nick their bank details and hack into their bank accounts and things. But you do not lose anything for doing that. So you can go around just making yourself a millionaire in about 20 minutes, and the game goes, yeah, it's all right. So it does seem like a game full of interesting ideas that they didn't quite finish building up.
A question I've got to ask then is, I think it's pretty much definite on the cards, regardless of how well or not received this game would have been. There probably will be a Watch Dogs 2 currently in development. Do you think there's enough they can like add to it or to mix it up or whatever where they could actually turn this around to quite a successful series like an Assassin's Creed type thing a couple years down the road? Or is it a bit too shaky already?
I think the ideas they got in the game at the moment, some a bit more development could be really build up on the sequel. I think this game is one of those, it's just a test bed, just to see what sticks.
Yeah.
And in the sequel, they're just going to throw away all the bad ideas and just keep the good ones, and they'll probably add some more bad ideas as Ubisoft. So, Watch Dogs 2.
Watch Dogs 2 not coming to Wii U.
I very much doubt it. What a shock.
So yeah, that's what's
we're just putting it out there.
All right, cool. Harrison, what have you been playing recently?
Knowing that we're stretched for time, but I am actually been finally revisiting some good memories with the Metroid Prime trilogy, which I downloaded last week.
It was a smart purchase.
Oh yeah, it was definitely a better purchase than a better decision than when I decided to hold off on buying the actual retail version of this. And I thought I was never going to play the Metroid Prime 1 and 2 with the new controls or in widescreen. But luckily that's been corrected on the point. But much like with any game, I mean, I hold so much love for Metroid Prime. I mean, to the day when I first got it for Christmas about 13 years ago, it's still, you know, it's one of those few gaming moments where I just like was in awe of just everything around me, just especially with the details that Retro Studios did to put into every room, because the thing that I loved about their designs is they make every room seem so much unique, and just their artistic design that they put to each of these areas and even the game itself, it's quite so much to handle when you just kind of want to just stop and look around. And it still kind of holds up right now as far as like visually. I mean, I feel like as more generations go by, I'm starting to think like, okay, it's kind of starting to show its age visually, but still it's not that big of a jump, whatever, but downgrade as I saw when I kept going back and play Ocarina of Time, where you look back and you're like, oh, everything's really blocky. And but no, with first thing I just kept going through like the first few hours of Prime, I just kept being like, you know, I'm like, yeah, I remember where this is, I remember where everything is, I remember where the Morph Ball is, remember where the bombs are, super missiles. And then I get to a point where I'm like, oh God, I forgot where this is. And, you know, I swore that I was not going to use Game Facts for this entire run through. And I did. And I felt like, well, I had a good run. I got about like 5-7 hours into it. And I was like, oh boy. But no, it isn't. And, you know, like when I was getting back to the rooms idea, like how everything's like designed so well, is it does make it a little easier to kind of know where you're going, because again, not one room is alike, unless you count maybe the save rooms and the elevators. But taking just in consideration to the Wii motion controls, it did take a little while to get used to. Then again, I was so comfortable with Metroid Prime 3 Corruption. It one thing I did turn off is there's the option for free roam lock on, which of course when you lock onto a character, you're still locked into the enemy, but you can still move your reticle in any direction, like in any portion on there. I turned that off because I'm just so comfortable with just how the usual lock on system for that game was, because even with free roam, it did make it slightly a little more difficult just to hit weak spots or even smaller enemies that are like, you know, like the hive hornets and anything that's really, really small. But, you know, it was a bit jarring first with those controls, but, you know, obviously switched to advanced mode. Everything seems a little bit more like a point and click FPS on a PC. And a lot of good memories just coming past of this one. I was like, I'm relieved that, you know, good decision Nintendo's part to actually, part of their first few Wii titles to actually release that collection in general. One, a couple of details that I didn't notice on there, because one thing that Metroid Prime that I liked was, at its time and its release visually, was Retromat had a knack for details. I mean, this goes beyond just areas and rooms, but there were a few things that were kind of removed, and I think they did discuss this, like, well, downgrade as far as visually, and a couple sites addressed this when the collection came out, is things such as water and even a few things close up in detail have been kind of downgraded a bit. Like, for instance, if you have Samus's power beam and you just, like, hit A as fast as you can, I remember in the GameCube version, if you hit it so fast, you see steam coming up from her arm cannon.
Yeah.
I did that so many times on this one just because that was one of my favorite effects. It's not present on there.
Yeah.
And that was just and then I'm thinking, like, okay, what few details did they take out of this one? I don't know. It just felt like you were just taking away from a game which I felt like during that generation was probably the most well made and most eye catching during that time. But yeah, I mean, it's for anybody who has not experienced these games, please, please pick this up. I know it's $20 now. I got 10 for the first week. It's worth it. Yeah, it really is.
I think the crazy thing about that deal is that still at $20,
yeah,
it's a great deal for these games.
Yeah, you're getting
three fantastic games.
You're getting three 15 hours worth of games on there for each. So there you go. I mean,
yeah, definitely. And I mean, I did download the trilogy when it had the half price offer. I've not even launched it yet, and usually I feel a bit of regret after like making a download purchase but not jumping into it straight away. But this was definitely deliberate in the terms that they had that 1 week half price discount, because soon I will be jumping into that and having a very great time. Got some really, really fond memories of the original Metroid Prime, and I've never played the trilogy in terms of the Wii Remote controls. So looking forward to seeing how that looks in the widescreen as well. What I have been playing recently, though, and I've not been playing it much, so I'll keep it short and I'll give some updates on the next show, is Shantae and the Pirate's Curse, which very recently came out on the European eShop just last week, I believe. And I've played a bunch of the other Shantae games. I've always liked the idea of him, but I never usually get that far into them. However, this game seems to open up in quite a different fashion to the previous ones. It's a lot more directed. Got some cool set pieces at the beginning, and it kind of pushes you forwards.
You would say it pushes you way forward.
Well, you would say that, but
I know. Direct your very angry remarks at my pun, like at my email at the end of the show.
No, I definitely agree. But yeah, the feel of the game, it just kind of, it's clicked with me, and I like kind of the exploration around the village and talking to the characters and that sort of stuff. But more so, the actual character movement feels a lot more snappier this time around, and I don't know, it's hard to describe, but it has clicked with me. It's got this really great feeling to it. The music's really cool. The sprite art's good. The actual like hand-drawn profile art stuff, really great as well. It's got really good 3D effects on the 3DS. So I'm looking forward to getting my teeth into this one. I will report more back on it shortly.
That one was like $20, isn't it?
I believe. I'm not sure the American price, but I can say over here in Europe, you can also do a buy one, get one half price, because it's available on both Wii U.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I forgot that was a cross-buy, too.
Yeah. So it's not buy one, get one free. It's buy one, get one half off.
I never did play the first Shantae game, because Shantae on the Game Boy Color, it was one of the last games released in the Game Boy Color, because the Game Boy Advances were out, and hence that kind of got lost in the shuffle, and it kind of became this lost gem slash cult hit for a while.
Didn't that get really stuck a lot on the 3DS Virtual Console?
Yes, it did, and I've been meaning to download that, because I remember the previous hosts of Infendo Radio, from when I listened for the longest time, they actually, I think it was Blake or somebody else on there, they did mention how much they liked, how much he raved about Shantae's Risky's Revenge.
No, it's definitely a series I've always followed. I've liked how they kind of kept going with it. It's kind of always seemed like it would be one of those one-hit wonder type things. But I do like how they're kind of pushing forwards with Shantae. Although, I mean, I've obviously opted for the 3DS version of this, because basically because the Wii version is just that, but blown up, but with HD, like, profile art. But I was part of I backed the Kickstarter for, you know, the full HD version of Shantae. Was it Half Genie Hero? And that looks incredible. I can't wait to play that on the TV. It looks so good. Like, everything's hand-drawn by the looks of it. Looks absolutely gorgeous. So yeah, I'm gonna play this, you know, real great pixel perfectness on the 3DS, and play the hand drawn version when it comes out on the Wii U later on. So yeah, that I think just about covers what we've been playing. I did say I'd keep it brief, and I think we didn't quite do that. But we'll jump into the Nintendo news now, and we do have quite a few cool stories to go over. The first one is the Xenoblade Cross Direct, as it was in Japan.
It's called Cross.
It is called Cross. It's a weird distinction. It is Cross in Japan and X over here. And not only that, they've dropped the word Chronicles. So it's just Xenoblade Cross over there. So we've got some new details of the game. The first thing I have on the list here is Pro Controller support.
That's a no-brainer.
It is. Well, I wasn't 100% sure they were going to do it, because I knew they were going to do some stuff with the touchscreen. So I thought they might just say, oh, it's the gamepad, because you need to use the map and so on. But they are given the option, which is good.
Yeah. I think it's the gamepad's just a shortcut to the map. I'm sure you can still do it for a menu.
Yeah, I think you may even need it for certain bits, but you might use it like in Pikmin, where you like use one controller and you have the gamepad by your side for when you do need it. But we'll see. It does look like it's got some good touchscreen stuff going on there. Next thing we've got is preloading support. Essentially, like in Smash Bros., which I think is the only other game they've done this for. Well, I could be wrong there.
I think you're right. I think that was the only bigger title I think that was that did something
like that. Yeah, I don't think they did like a Midnight Captain Toad preload or something.
Oh, come on. You know you would want to preload that. I was all on that.
Yeah. I think the smart move here was, obviously because it was aimed at the Japanese audience, they announced the preload feature and they said that it goes live after the broadcast ended. And then so people could jump onto the eShop and start downloading the game. Obviously, they wouldn't play it and be able to play it till the release date. But that, I guess, kind of goes into our next point, which is the game is 22.7 gig. For a Wii U game, that is pretty gigantic.
That's huge.
So yeah, that pretty much takes up the full disk.
So basically, if you bought a Wii U Deluxe version just to have this and download this game, I think you would only have maybe 4 gigs left, because the pre-installed software takes about like 5 gigs.
Yeah, they would, I think, yeah, just about squeeze on. It wouldn't be the most ideal situation. But I guess for some, having a Xenoblade Cross box wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. Maybe they'll have a disc for Bayonetta 2, and that'll be their collection. Next thing we've got here, they finally have started talking about the online support for this game. I think it was like teased on like the very first video they showed for this. They had like this text box, which seemed to have like feed of people chatting in it. And they've confirmed there will be 4-player support for certain quests in this game.
So you can't necessarily play online during the main story to this?
No, that doesn't sound like it's going to be the case. It's going to be set missions or set quests. You'll be able to play with up to 3 other people online. And it also supports a USB keyboard. They didn't mention anything about voice chat, so I assume you can't. Whereas I guess they would have mentioned it. But what they did also say is, in addition to this kind of 4-player online mode, you can connect to up to 32 people online for sort of like a chat hub, and you'll also be able to exchange items with each other and information. Although I'm not sure that's just another word for talking to each other.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's the item exchange sounds quite interesting. The fact that you can like just have a big hub of people. Maybe that helps with the grouping up into quests. It's a weird system, really.
It is. I mean, why don't people just use like an alternative?
Well, like jump on Skype or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would imagine so, but maybe the game makes it easy. Like, maybe you can go into, I don't know, like a shop in the town or something, and you can like just put up like you want to join like a guild or something, and these are your interests, and maybe you can just hop in, or maybe they will integrate it in a clever way.
Final Fantasy 11 and 14 did something similar to this, but obviously this is apples and oranges when in terms of online with those two games.
Yeah.
And this that's what I think with the USB keyboard support kind of comes in. I think that's going to make it a little bit more easier just to, you know, chat and type whatever as far as when it comes to quests, if it's like the four-player online, you know, where to go and how to plan these things out. I mean, does Monster Hunter support keyboard support as well?
Yeah, it does. So yeah, I'm thinking maybe the whole 32-player hub type thing, it might be just so you can do like this kind of pseudo online multiplayer. So in theory, you could all be going out doing like different quests, but maybe with the aim of like getting certain materials, and then you could like help trade them with each other, and maybe you're trying to like build up your armor or build up whatever, and it's just kind of helps you kind of tailor that towards that type of thing. I'm sure they've got some like general idea in mind to even bother putting this feature in there.
Yeah, looking at this, obviously, we had talked, I think, last week, thinking whether or not this online for Xenoblade was going to be in a passive sense, as in not really direct having it online. Well, 32-player online chat in the item exchange, that does have a sense of passiveness, whereas, you know, the online 4-player quest support, we have a version of online play with this now. It's just it's not directly committed to the story where you can have three other your friends and join into just finish the game.
Yeah, and I guess these types of modes do support the fact that you do have that custom character. And so I guess even with the when you are talking to each other, maybe your avatar is your main character, and that's one more reason like why he is a character you create opposed to just a set story-driven character.
Yeah, probably. I mean, the only thing I'll say about the online 4-player quest support is, do you think that's like them trying to get into that Monster Hunter crowd?
Yeah, I mean, the more I think of it, the more it sounds like it's kind of like a Monster Hunter light mode.
Yeah, and it's just going to be like, you know, it's just going to be a big boss that you will fight together, and you'll get materials at the end, and which I'm happy to do.
Yeah, there's lots of, you know, gigantic monsters to hunt in this game, as it were, so.
Oh, yeah, I think it was evident during the first trailer we saw 2 years ago, where we saw, like, oh, it's Monolith Soft's doing their take on Monster Hunter. All right, I'm ears. No, I get to see this 4-player support quest going somewhere else. Who knows? There's always the option for challenges. They'll probably do something in the same vein what we did with like Tag Climax and Bayonetta 2.
This is true. So we'll move on to a few more technical details. They've confirmed the game will run in 720p. I don't think they mentioned on the frame rate of the game. From the looks of it, it won't be 60, so I imagine it will be a 720, 30 frames type deal. Maybe that will go a little bit lower, we'll see.
I've heard people complain about why it's only in 720, it's only going to be in 720p.
That's fine in my book, I mean.
See, it's fine, it still looks great from what we've seen from each bit of new footage.
And it's again, I mean, if we compare it to our like more powerful brethren, as it were, most of their games are 720 currently, so I'm not sure.
It's a bit of a moot point at the end of the day.
Yeah, I'm not sure why people are being so picky on the Wii U here. It's a beautiful looking game.
It just brings back memories of the arguments between when I went NeoGAF of them arguing about the resolution to both compare to the Xbox One and the PS4. Oh dear, did my eyes melt during reading that. It's like, just let it go.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we've seen like loads of videos of this game now, and it just looks absolutely stunning. No matter kind of what setting the game is taking place at that time. Next, we have a confirmation of off-TV support. One of these things we always assume, but this is the first time they've actually revealed it.
Yeah, that's no surprise there.
Yeah, again, it's good to have. I imagine because of the length of the game, I will be sat on this couch at some point, just kind of. Yeah. Doing like grinding-esque type stuff. But I probably would rather play it on the TV when there's like actual like story-driven events happening. I think I'd miss some of the excitement if it was just on the small screen. We then kind of transition onto some Xenoblade 3D news. Oh, in the edition, actually, I'll finish this off. There's also going to be a bundle in Japan for Xenoblade Cross with the Wii U console. It's going to come with the Wii U gamepad, the game on a disc, it sounds like, instead of being pre-installed, which I guess isn't too much of a surprise.
Because... I would say that'd be kind of a very misnomer when it comes to like how much drive it is. Like, here's a console, like, where's all my space? I'm like, oh yeah, we put that all into that. Sorry.
Well, yeah, also it'd be like Nintendo's prerogative to give them some space so they can actually buy some games to actually go on there, opposed to, you know, just fill the whole space with the game which came with the bundle.
They just need to actually increase the hard drive space.
Oh, even if it was like a 64 edition, not that that would solve any of the issues, but I'm sure that would be not very huge task for them to accomplish.
It's one of those things, if they were going to do it, they would have done it by now.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, well, the new Wii U could be around the corner.
Yeah, and I'm reading on this right now. It's coming with not only like the bundle, it has like an art book, a prepaid card. So they're giving you cash with this.
Yes, which maybe that suggests you better spend it on the game. Yeah, I just thought about that because it might just be, you know, just to spruce up the deal. But yeah, it's like a Xenoblade customized eShop card.
I wouldn't be surprised if in the game there's a store you can go to where you use your eShop credit to buy certain, you know, clothing or like for your avatar.
I was going to say, do you reckon they would go down the mobile route where you can just buy in-game money with your real money?
Xenoblade Freemium Edition.
Oh man, that would be something else. The amount of money you would spend.
Now, this has already been confirmed for an April release, April release in Japan.
Yeah, I believe it is, actually. We've got no news of when it's going to come out over here.
That brings me to a point thinking about is that English localization started about a month ago. Just off the top of your head, when will we probably see this?
I still think towards the end of the year. I can't see it. I think the earliest I can see it is probably September.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm thinking something similar. Also think they'll probably have more of a chance to sell this game if they can kind of hype it up for near the holiday season. But I'm hoping they'll surprise us and make it like a summer game or something like that.
Yeah, I think Zelda will be the big holiday game.
That's true, yeah. I mean, assuming they think they can still get that out in time, they probably would want to space that between Zelda and this, because they want this to sell well as well, and they obviously know that Zelda will sell. However, on the line of release dates, we do know about Xenoblade Chronicles 3D for the 3DS. In America, it's coming out April 10th, and in Europe, it's coming out a little bit earlier, on April the 2nd. And we've got a few more details about the portable entry. It's going to support both Amiibo and Street Pass, and it seems like both features will earn you tokens. I'm not sure how else you earn tokens, but tokens will help you unlock music and character models in the gallery for the game. So it doesn't sound like either feature is particularly unique or useful.
Yeah, I do love, though, that the release date between North America and Europe is only 8 days this time. Whereas on the original release.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah, because I guess we did get it a little bit earlier last time.
Oh, yeah, you guys did get it a bit little earlier. You got it, like, we had to wait quite a bit.
Yeah. So much so, obviously, you ended up with our localization.
Thank you, Project Ringfall.
Okay, that wraps up our talk on Xenoblade. And now we move on to my favorite topic, Splatoon. So, on to the Splatoon news.
You were waiting for this, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, as much as I love talking about Splatoon, it's not the most joyous of news to talk about. So, we've had some more details come out from the game, from a Famitsu article, and the main thing is there will be no voice chat, at least in random matches where it was explicitly mentioned. The way it was worded, maybe that's just across the whole board for the game. As a team-based game, that is a quite a shame.
Yeah, exactly, because you won't be able to coordinate with your team. You know, what's going on? You can go over there, I'll go here. And
yeah.
I mean, I can kind of understand what they did with Smash Brothers. I mean, even though I would have liked the idea of voice chat during matches, but I guess that was a matter of just lag at a stability. But I don't know how to do it. These are just weird decisions on Nintendo's part.
Yeah, definitely. I'm hoping that they'll reveal something for like friend matches, yeah, that they will have a different setup in mind. But yeah, as it stands, no voice chat for at least for the random matches. What they have said though, players around the world will be grouped together based on skill level. Additionally, there won't be any CPU players thrown into the mix, as the game only supports human-controlled 4v4 matches. So it doesn't seem like they have a matchmaking system in place. And so hopefully that is fairly sophisticated, where you could, if you were, you know, very, very skilled at the game, you'll also be paired up with also very skilled people. And so kids could be playing this game happily, and so could adults, both having very different game experiences out of it.
Nothing wrong. So, I mean, I'm curious to how this plays online.
Yeah. This next one's kind of more of a reconfirmation of details, but still good to know. Studio is also working on a local multiplayer option, as well as a 3D platforming game type dubbed Hero Mode.
I really hope that single player mode is good. I mean, I feel like any game that's relies heavily on its online or local multiplayer, it's just with today's first-person shooters, you just buy it solely just for its multiplayer. And anything with a campaign is always just throwaway. But I really hope this one's pretty deep to the point where it's both enjoyable and replayable.
Yeah, well, from what we've seen of it, it seems like it's almost like a 3D platformer type of a game mode. And it seems like you're using your gun as like a puzzle mechanic to get through the stages. It seems like you're going to get a very different experience from playing the single player than you do with like the arena team-based multiplayer.
Almost kind of like Nintendo's take on Portal, almost.
In a sense, I guess. Kind of reminds me quite a bit of Mario Galaxy whenever I see those little one-player bits of this game. It'd be worth hunting down a video of the one-player mode. But yeah, it looks completely different to the multiplayer mode. The only similarities there is like the main character and the weapon they use, but it's used in a very different way. So yeah, I'm not sure how the local multiplayer mode will work, because again, what we've seen so far, it uses quite a lot of the gamepad stuff.
Uses the gamepad for aiming, yeah.
Not just for aiming, but you tap on the touch screen on your teammates to jump to them, which seems like quite a important part of moving around the map and getting where you need to go. So I'm not sure how you're going to replicate that on a different controller, or if like one person has that gamepad and one person doesn't. If they let them have those features, don't they have a clear advantage? Mm. Or maybe it's something a bit different. It'd be interesting to see. Maybe it is like an asymmetric multiplayer, which we're not expecting. Maybe they do the whole zombie U thing, and they make the person use the pro controller of all things, and then the person with the gamepad controls the octopuses, and they set some more bond points and that sort of thing. I don't know. But, yep, apparently there is, in quotes, a local multiplayer in the works. And the final bit of news we have for Splatoon is that it will feature music from Toru Minegishi, whose work has been featured in a number of Zelda, Mario and Animal Crossing games. And so, well, we've obviously heard some of the Splatoon music. It's all been very catchy, at least in my opinion, and I pretty much love the soundtrack so far. Yeah, looking forward to hearing more from it. And that finishes up Splatoon, and we have an announcement, more so, on Pokemon Bank. And so, currently there is a promotional offer going on, or there will be in the very near future. Just give you the bullet points very quickly. So this affects Pokemon Bank subscribers, and you've got a bit of time, if you're not a subscriber, to jump in now if you want to be a part of this deal or this offer. So Meganium, Typhlosion and Feraligatr will be available to download for Pokemon Bank subscribers later this month. Between February 27th and November 30th, those who take part in Pokemon Bank will be able to download all three Johto starters. Each are level 50 and come with a hidden ability. Meganium will have Leaf Guard, which under harsh sunlight will be able to prevent status ailments. Since this Meganium also knows Sunny Day, that won't be a problem to execute. Typhlosion is Flash Fire, which makes it immune to fire-type moves. It also has moves Overheat, Flame Charge, and Flame Thrower. Finally, for Alligator's hidden ability is Sheer Force, which eliminates status effects of moves. Its moves include Ice Fang, Waterfall, and Crunch. To recap, Pokemon Bank is available on the eShop for $4.99 a year.
I have a confession. I haven't tried out Pokemon Bank ever since I picked up X and Y.
Well, to be completely honest, you're not beyond this. You've not been missing out on much. I have been technically using the service, but I've only ever used it.
Just to recap, this is just a means of transferring, you know, Pokemon from other games into.
Essentially, yeah. It's like online storage for your Pokemon. So, in theory, if you were like filling up all your boxes in the game, you have like a whole bunch of extra space. In Pokemon Bank, you can transfer them to and from fairly easily. Having used it, I can only see it being useful for the most hardcore Pokemon fanatics, because in the games you do get a lot of boxes to store Pokemon in, and it's good to use it to transfer things across, but beyond just transferring them from one game to the next game, I'm not using the service at all. So I think it's good that they are adding these like little bonus things in here. And so if they keep doing this type of thing, it's more of a reason for me to like keep my subscription going, as it were. I mean, it's nice to have a little perk like that.
Yeah, it's like an incentive.
Yeah, because the only use I'm getting out of Pokemon Box or Pokemon Bank even is to, when the next game comes out, use it to transfer them to the next, which seems a bit, I don't know.
Isn't that a little bit pointless, though, because you still need to get all the badges?
It lets you kind of like build up this collection.
Would they obey you, even though you haven't got the badges?
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't use them straight off the bat, but I mean, obviously the plan is to obviously get all the badges in that game. Yeah. And that's just kind of like, in a sense, the starting phase. Then you can kind of build up your new battle team and you can do those extra post-game stuff. And then you've got your old mons to play with the mix. So you can, have a couple there for your new battle team and a couple from your new set. But yeah, I like what they're doing with it, and I do like this promotional offer. I hope they just chuck some more. Be nice if they did one every couple of months or every quarter at least.
Yeah, it's a nice little incentive that they're doing with this service. It's just I wish I tried it out a little bit more. I mean, even took the plunge. I think it just, after I played Pokemon Y, I think I just got all Pokemon out for a while. That's the reason why I didn't really jump into the remakes of Ruby and Sapphire. So, I don't know, yeah, I agree. If they do more of these promotions, I mean, it just gives more incentive just to, help fill up your Pokedex, which I know is quite a bigger task than it was when the first generation was. So,
yeah, substantial. No, it's good to see. And we'll move on now to our final piece of news. However, it is a big one. And it is that Netflix is supposedly making a Legend of Zelda TV show. And I'll go through some of the details we have before our discussion. First up, Netflix is in the early stages of developing. It's a live-action series, obviously based off The Legend of Zelda. Netflix are describing it as Game of Thrones for a family audience.
That was my kind of a red flag for me, but go on.
Netflix is said to be working closely with Nintendo, which obviously is good to know. Netflix is still seeking a writer to work on the series. And finally, when approached for confirmation, Netflix declined comment. Nintendo hasn't responded yet. Essentially rumour at this point. But this news actually did come from, was it the Wall Street Journal?
The Wall Street Journal first reported this.
Yes. So, how do we feel about a live-action, family Game of Thrones-esque Legend of Zelda TV show?
Two things. One, most importantly, wouldn't it make more sense to maybe do this series in animated?
Yeah.
Because I believe the same animation group that put up the 2007 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, the one that came out that was supposed to be meant as a sequel to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, they did a test footage using for Zelda to give to Nintendo, which they shot down. And I feel like, you know, with the live action, though, it's a bit more tricky to do because, and this is going to lead into my next point, though, is because you have so many different parables to actually deal with and to kind of make sure you're not screwing with the mythos and, you know, alienating fans, because we know Nintendo's first when they first delved into a live-action adaptation of one of their properties, and dare I say, I don't want to go more another experience like that. And when I was mentioning how there's too many parables to this is, okay, which leads to my second point, Link doesn't talk.
Yeah, that's my concern.
Because, and somebody on Twitter had mentioned this, like, as a joke, whatever, it said, I finally got a hold of the first script, whatever, for the live-action Zelda series, and it just shows these descriptions of the scene, and when it gets to Link to say his lines, it's just dot, 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 dot. Next one's Link, dot, 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 dot. Nothing.
Well, personally, I think Tingu would make a rather good starring role for this TV show. You could just follow his trials and tribulations of, you know, the hassles of being Tingu in that world. But no. But I think it's, as jokingly as that is, I think it will be odd seeing characters like Tingu or just the Gorons or Zoras and so on in a live-action environment. I mean, unless this has, like, an absolutely huge budget behind it.
That's the thing.
I'm just worried about, like, cringe-like moments whenever they do bring in these non-human characters.
Yeah, you see it and you think, oh, that costume is terrible.
Exactly.
For a television show that's exclusive to Netflix, you know the budget for this is going to inflate to huge proportions. And, I mean, this is not necessarily like, oh, they're greenlighting this right now. Again, this is discussions. I mean, there's a possibility that this thing could easily get shelved.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, if anything, it's probably more likely it not to come out than it to actually be a finalized product in the end with how these things go.
Yeah. I mean, clearly, nothing's been written yet. Nothing's been put down on paper. They could easily go, that's
yeah,
it.
And at any various stages, Nintendo could just step in and say they're not happy with how it's progressing.
Yeah, and this shouldn't come as for adaptations for in this day and age shouldn't become a kind of surprise, especially this company, because after the, you know, Metroid revival on the GameCube and a few years after the first game, just remember, John Woo was in discussion with Nintendo to make a live-action Metroid game, or a film. That obviously never got off the ground. And of course, from the latest Sony hack, from the Sony hack from about a few months back, is we knew that Sony was in collaboration with Nintendo to make an animated Super Mario Brothers movie.
Yeah, and so, in theory, that could still be progressing nicely, but it could also have been pulled by now. We'll never know.
That's the thing.
It makes you think, what other, if you had to scrap the Zelda, just any type of adaptation of Zelda right now and start fresh, and let's leave Mario Brothers out of this as well, what other Nintendo franchises do you think would probably fit well for maybe a live-action or animated series on Netflix?
Well, I think on the animated side, I think obviously Pikmin makes a lot of sense in the fact that Nintendo has already played around with the shorts that they released on the Wii on the 3DS, and they were talking about how they would like to do animation with that series before that point. So I'm surprised that we haven't had any sort of more proper collaborations between Nintendo and some sort of animation studio to do something else with Pikmin. So I wouldn't be too surprised if we do see some sort of, like, extended series of Pikmin shorts come out of someone for a service like Netflix or something like that.
If I had to say my suggestion, maybe a Xenoblade Chronicles anime, or even go the route of Star Fox. I feel like that has enough whatever to be on a good animated series its own.
Well, so, and if they do want to go down like an anime-esque route, going with Kid Icarus in the same vein as the 3DS game, because they've already had some kind of anime-esque animation for that, and they had some shorts around that, and they also use that same style for Pit's introduction video in the Wii U edition of Smash 3DS. Oh, sorry, Smash Wii U even. So that's kind of already in that anime style, and it follows that same type of humor and a lot of anime tropes in that. So it seems like that series is kind of ready, and because it's only had that one game of recent years, it's obviously quite adaptable at this point.
Now, go on, Colin.
I was just going to say, my suggestion would probably be My first thought was Metroid, but then when you analyze that a little bit, you realize that the Metroid series is kind of depressing. It's about mass genocide, really, or an alien race.
Join our bounty hunter as she like commits genocide on an alien species. Exactly. Next on Netflix.
but yeah, I agree with Harrison about Star Fox. I think that'd be quite a good one to do.
Yeah, yeah, and it might kind of just fit in with what they're going to do with the Wii U game, because we have no idea about the style of this thing yet. And right. You never know. Maybe they would launch some sort of multimedia type project with it, where they will release like something else alongside the game and try and reboot Star Fox in that sense.
Yeah.
If it's anything kind of, as far as style, if it's anything just a bit above what that fake Legend of Zelda trailer that IGN put out for April Fool's Day a couple years ago, if it's anywhere near that, I may have some hope. But again, it's just like, we have the animated series from the 80s mm-hmm. to look at as like their first attempt, and that I like that just purely for nostalgia factor, even though it just goes against the characters in every single form of how they were created. But I gotta say right now, they have no writer, but let's just kind of throw out right now, who play your suggestions for who plays who if this is officially greenlit? Because I have one guess for Ganondorf, and that's Michael Shannon. that's my only throne of the hat. A friend of mine, we were discussing this on Twitter. He did joke, whatever. They could always just put Gilbert Godfrey as Navi. I mean, make it even more annoying as possible.
I guess another question we'd have to answer is whether they would go with the more obvious adult Link, or would they put in Child Link instead? You could have a more like Harry Potter-esque story going through. If they really think this is something which could go on for many years, and you could see the character grow the adult Link, that would be really interesting to watch.
Plus, it's aimed at a family audience.
Exactly, yeah.
Not even a series. Think of it this way. This would be a good suggestion. Instead of just like a series that you go by season, they could do maybe like, I don't know, say like a 16-episode miniseries or something like that. And think of it this way. It focuses on different iterations of Link.
That would be cool, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of different ideas of what they could do with this. And one of the more interesting ones, I thought, was that why not pitch it around that, it is the universe of Hyrule. It is called The Legend of Zelda. But the way you tackle the Link problem is just don't have Link in it. You frame it in a way that obviously there's all these different stories that could be going on in that universe. Obviously you could have Princess Zelda in there still. But to not irritate the fans or to not screw it up in that sense, just base it on a bunch of different characters in Hyrule.
Yeah, unless, because it says they're working closely with Nintendo on this. They are going to give Link a voice in this game. And that's what they're going to base it on.
Yeah, I mean, we've not seen anything on that side yet. I mean, it's completely possible that Zelda Wii U could be fully voiced.
I doubt that very much, but...
Yeah, the vibe is...
I'm fully on board for them to having voice acting in this one. I think they've gone long enough. I mean, the last one with Skyward Sword, in their terms of their cinematics and the way they told I thought it was a really good story as far as the connection between Zelda and Link. But
definitely.
Again, it was missing that, I don't know, it's something about in this day and age when reading through text for a game of that scope and size that you're like, this really needs voice. I mean, my general idea of how to fix this is like, you know, find creative ways to make Link not speak and have all the secondary characters.
Yeah, they could end the Skyrim route, which is your main character never speaks.
Yeah, I'm not even so... sure why there's a big issue with the whole Link speaking today, because we know there are all these different Links through the timeline and so on. So if they just kind of confirm it and set it off that this is a new Link they've not seen before, what's the big deal with giving this guy a voice if this is the first time you're seeing him? You know? It's a bit of a weird one, because it's not like it is the same person who is throughout all these different games. It's a bunch of different characters.
Yeah, it's that interpretation. It's like the one from the cartoon is like Yeah, it has that voice, but that's a different Link. So
that's a bad
Link. But, I mean, again, the idea and possible outrage for this kind of stems from, you know, when you looked at Metroid Other M, which, by the way, I will...
That was not the problem with that game, there was.
No, that was not. Story was basically the problem with that game. That was just a Sakamoto's script on that was just felt like a really like half attempt at like a really crappy anime. And I follow the Samus's voice actress on Twitter, Jessica Martin. I mean, I condemn her for doing a good job. It just she lacked pretty much a decent script. So. Yeah.
But then again, I guess that could be the fears that people have, which could happen with Zelda, that they get the game spot on, but for whatever reason, they kind of fall apart on the narrative aspect of it.
I mean, if you want a game that's based on Zelda, that has voice acting and works, I would say Star Fox Adventures. I mean, Fox speaks in that, and it works for the most part, I think.
It's been such a long time since I've played bit of that game. Was that fully voice acted in Star Fox Adventures?
That's quite impressive. it was all done by Rare, the staff at Rare, and you can easily hear that hint of their British accents through a lot of the characters.
But it's just the idea that, you know, voice acting in those sort of games does work. And I think Nintendo needs to sort of embrace that for the next... I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, Rare was definitely ahead of the game and that sort of thing. I mean, like, I think... both Perfect Dark and, say, Conker's Bad Fur Day on the N64, pretty much fully voice acted throughout that thing, especially Conker's Bad Fur Day had huge amounts of voice acting in. And that was on an N64 cart. but, I mean, I felt, to kind of bring it back to Zelda, that Harrison, you were mentioning on Skyward Swords, but I thought as early as Twilight Princess, it felt off. That there were kind of these moments in the game where, like, the characters were animated and moving, and then the text bubbles were popping up at the same time. Yeah. And so they weren't static anymore. They were trying to convey this scene where they were kind of walking across. And they would kind of not quite pause, but they would kind of repeat their animation till you press the A button and the next text would come across. But it just felt so awkward that they had to go through those hoops to just convey that scene where normally you would just sit down the controller for a moment and just watch it for 5 minutes or whatever. Right. But I don't know what they're going to do with the next game. But to bring it back to the TV show conversation, I really do hope that something comes out of this. I know Netflix has quite a lot of money to be throwing around, and they're quite a good... I think they've got quite a good cred currently, Netflix.
Yeah, they've had a
perspective of them.
Yeah, Orange is the New Black, House of Cards, both have been really good hits on their hands, even though I thought the idea of exclusive shows on Netflix just, I thought it would just, as far as in terms of like budget and just how much it would be produced, whatever, how it would turn out, and luckily I was wrong about it, so.
Now I've been watching a fair bit of Netflix recently, and I can't think of the name of the show, but there is a Netflix original anime on there.
Knights of Sidonia.
That's the one, yeah. It's kind of crafted with 3D models, but looks like anime, is my understanding of what I saw from the first episode. And that looked pretty good. And obviously, yeah, they've done a bunch of Netflix originals now, and I'm thinking, hopefully, they've seen the potential in this deal. That if they do this right, they could have this absolutely huge hit on their hands, and they will bring on a new audience who don't currently use their service. And I hope Nintendo sees the potential in it, in the fact that if they can get this being a really good show, not just for the gamers, but for that wider audience, that they could draw genuine people in to their consoles to play this game. Because they could have this hit TV show, which is based on an exclusive game they have. I mean, it's kind of a backwards way of looking at it, from us knowing it's such a fantastic game series. But, I mean, yeah, you get the right writers involved, you get the right people actually playing the roles for this, which obviously there's so many tricky things to get right to make it good. But if they can pull it off, it would be such a big win for them. And I think it's been such a long time now since, like, of the embarrassing events of of the animated show and obviously the Mario movie and all that stuff, I think it's worth giving this stuff another go with, you know, put your best foot forwards, get the right people involved. Yeah, they've got these great IP here, and I think it's about time we see them on the TV and getting some other people involved as well. So I'm just kind of more so hoping that something actually comes out of this thing and we don't hear 6 months or a year down the road that for whatever reason it got moved, it got cancelled, whatever.
It wouldn't surprise me knowing that when you have certain game properties that are just gotten into, you know, like certain studios acquire the rights to make adaptations of these. I mean, and most of them don't get out. They get the ball rolling and things look like it's about to start shooting, but then things fall apart the last minute. I mean, two examples are, I remember when Peter Jackson was trying to produce, like, you know, the Halo movie, and they were trying to get Neil Blomkamp, who directed, you know, District 9 and Elysium and the soon-to-be-released Chappie. That obviously fell through, and I think Neil Blomkamp ended up doing District 9 instead, which he borrowed a lot of elements that he was going to use for that. And then there was the Bioshock movie, which I think Gore Verbinski was going to do, but the studios did not want to make it an R-rated film. They wanted it to be PG-13, and of course that got shelved as well. So this is not uncommon when you hear things like stuff like video games getting to be TV or film adaptations. These things start out strong, and at the drop of the hat, they fall apart.
Or they come out and they're not that great.
This is true. They are. I do think we're in a time where that TV is just getting a lot better and better. People are putting decent money into it, and we are getting these fantastic series. I'm just kind of hoping that they can line everything up, and Legend of Zelda could be one of those, like, can't wait to see the next episode type shows. I mean, it doesn't have to be this scenario, what we were describing before, where it is those really embarrassing animated series or the live-action Mario film and so on. Why couldn't it be a great TV show? We know it's got the story for it and the characters and all those little bits which kind of make up that world. It's just getting the right people involved and making sure it does get through to completion. But whether this will be it, it's hard to say.
I'm intrigued, but I'm cautiously optimistic. That's where I'm at, even though I would prefer it to be animated.
Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, yeah, it could look good on both. I mean, but it's going to be a lot trickier to get the live-action one looking right. But if they could pull it off, it would be great to see. Does anyone have any final comments on a live Netflix Zelda show?
I'm going through my nightmare scenario of casting, and I'd rather not share it just for the sake of my sanity.
Yeah, I mean, I just guess if it comes to fruition, I'd simply do it right.
All right, and one, I'm going to go around and give a very quick question to the three of us. I've not decided my answer yet. If this had to be based off a particular Zelda game, which game would you like this TV show to be based off of? We'll start with you, Colin.
Well, I mean, if they're going to charge it towards a family audience, I think the obvious choice is Wind Waker.
Oh, that's a good answer. Okay. Harrison?
No, that's a good choice out there. Obviously, it hits all the marks, whatever, of what they're trying to do as far as a family-friendly version of Game of Thrones. Sorry, I'm throwing up in my mouth a bit about that. Go with the first game. Simple story, classic, whatever. You can go places with that.
Excellent. And I've just realized, yeah, we're going with a family-friendly thing. And it wouldn't make much sense to do this for, like, the first series or whatever. But what I would be most intrigued to see is obviously something based off the very timely Majora's Mask. I think narrative-wise, you could do some really cool stuff with the three-day mechanic, as it were. I think that would be really cool to see. Actually, I mean,
it'd be a bit bleak, though.
I'm saying that, but I mean, the games themselves, I mean, they're family-friendly rated, aren't they?
Indeed.
I mean, they've managed to do what they need to do to give it that creepy atmosphere, but it doesn't actually explicitly say or do anything which takes it above in terms of an age rating. And so, yeah, the show could be similar, have a creepy atmosphere to it, but it, there's no blood, there's no expletives or anything like that.
You get that blood when you hit those Deku scrubs. Come on.
Yeah, just a lot of suggestions. It's a lot of talk about death.
Or Deku Barb. Deku Barb, sorry. Why did I say Deku scrubs? Like, duh, wow.
Okay, and I think that wraps up our final piece, and of course, the show itself. As always, do please send in your comments and questions to us, and you can send them to us via email at contact@infendo.com, or you can go to the site and scroll down to the comment section and add your comments there. And before we go, I'm going to quickly go around now, and we'll leave our Twitter and Miiverse handles where you can contact us. I shall start. Both my Miiverse and Twitter handle is Luvian, and that is spelt Leuvsion. And Harrison?
You have to go first, don't you, just to get all those friend invites. my Nintendo Network ID is Hybrid Meta, all one word, HYBRDMETA, and my Twitter handle is HMilfeld, all one word, HMILFELD.
Okay, and Colin?
Yeah, my Nintendo Network ID is Cole1990, it's just COL1990. My Twitter handle is Helium Bard. It's just like you think it's spelled, but that's,
Helium Bard. It is spelled how we think in your head.
That's right. Yeah, so that's what's about.
Okay, and that does officially bring us to the end of the show. Thank you very much for listening. This has been Infendo Radio.
Take care, everybody.
Goodbye.
Catch you next time.